Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. We're on every weekday, Monday through Friday, from 9 to 11 o'clock, or you can hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is competitiveness. All of my guests will be talking about becoming more competitive one way or another. My first guest is Executive Vice President of the Council on Competitiveness, a nonpartisan, non-governmental organization that works with CEOs, university presidents, labor leaders to ensure the U.S. has prosperity. We'll discuss what it takes to keep the United States competitive in the world marketplace. My second guest is a former 27-year high school football coach in the state of Delaware who's made a study of accomplishing the seemingly impossible. We'll discuss his blueprint for pulling off the upset both in business and in life. My third guest is a former partner at Spencer Stewart, one of the world's largest senior-level executive search firms. She pursued her own career dreams by founding her company. She created Career Mapping, a guide for finding your dream job straight out of college or for making a career move. We'll discuss using one's own GPS to find the job of a lifetime. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Bill Boer has a broad background as a senior executive in both the private and the public sector. He's the founder and principal of Boer & Associate, a Washington, D.C.-based consulting firm representing corporate, trade associations, and nonprofit clients. Interestingly, Bill began his career as a television news reporter with the local NBC affiliate in Knoxville, Tennessee, while pursuing his Bachelor of Arts degree in broadcast management from the University of Tennessee. He moved from the media into politics and government in 1973, serving as press secretary for the mayor of Knoxville, the North Carolina Commissioner of Labor, and the Tennessee U.S. Senator William Brock. Bill served as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Technology Policy at the U.S. Department of Congress, and he began his service to President George H.W. Bush as Chief of Staff at the National Telecommunications and Information Administration. Bill and his wife reside in McLean, Virginia, and they're the proud parents of two grown children. Welcome to the show, Bill. How are you today?
I am great, and thank you, Bill, for having us today.
Well, it's our pleasure to have a thought leader like yourself on the show, and I very much look forward to hearing what you have to say. So let's jump right in, shall we? President Barack Obama has made a move towards the center in his 2011 State of the Union speech, according to many pundits. Was that move enough from the standpoint of business and being competitive in the world marketplace?
Well, I think that as we've listened to the president's State of the Union address and the actions that he has taken, I think he is moving in the right direction. He's moving the direction of the American people, and I think that's the most important thing. Most people will tell you that America is a center country that is either center-right or center-left, but nonetheless center. And when you begin to look at our business climate and the competitiveness that that we face around the world, we have to be able to address the problems that will lead us to a competitive future in business, which will lead us individually to a more prosperous standard of living a family basis as well.
Hmm. Well, Bill, I know that as you listen to the president's State of the Union speech, there were some encouraging signs in that speech that this administration may adopt many of your council's recommendations to strengthen the U.S. economy. Let's look at a couple in particular, starting with taxation. Will this administration reduce the corporate income tax? Because right now we're the second highest corporate income tax in the world today, second only to Japan.
We certainly hope that will be an outcome, and that is something that for a number of years the Council on Competitiveness has called for. That reduction will be very important as we try to compete around the world. And by the way, let me mention that we are no longer number two. We are now number one, as the Japanese have reduced their corporate income tax below the 35% to 38% that we pay here in this country.
All right. Now, for those people listening and saying, well, wait a minute, we've got a deficit. We need more money in this country to pay some of the bills that we've got, crumbling infrastructure and everything else. Explain for my listeners why a lower corporate tax is important when you look at competitiveness on the world stage.
Well, there are a number of reasons why being competitive in the global marketplace on our corporate taxation, our entire package of what keeps jobs and creates jobs in the private sector in this country. It's a whole list of areas, and by reducing that tax, it makes for more favorable environments for our corporations to move forward. And also important, by reducing that tax, we're adding a certainty that the CEOs and leaders of organizations need to be able to make the decisions that they're going to make on plant, equipment, and hiring. And those are very important decisions for our overall economy and what our standard of living in this country will be as we roll through the second decade of the 21st century.
We're talking to Bill Boor, everybody, on the Council of Competitiveness. And Bill, talk to us also about the effect that it has on ordinary citizens who happen to hold shares of stock in a company, whether they hold those shares individually or whether they hold them through their 401k or their retirement plan. Isn't this a form of double taxation as well on the individual?
Well, the corporate taxes that you're referring to are the taxes that the corporations pay on their profits. So generally speaking, that does not flow through to the individual taxpayer. But in terms of stimulating the jobs market, stimulating the overall economy of the country, this is very important. And to a large degree, confidence is what drives the stock markets as well as the productivity of the workers. I mean, workers who feel good about themselves, feel good about the future of their companies, certainly are more productive than those who are worried about whether tomorrow is going to be their last day or the day after tomorrow is going to be the day that they have their house foreclosed on or whatever it may be in the current economic environment.
Well, that's a good answer, and we definitely need confidence. What I was referring to there, Bill, is this, that if a corporation pays income taxes and then pays a dividend to its shareholders, the dividend also comes out of the profits, and I, as a shareholder, have to pay taxes on those dividends as well. So that was the form of double taxation that I was referring to. But let's move on. All right, the administration has grudgingly kept the Bush tax rates unchanged at this moment in time. Will it move to lower the inheritance tax or increase the deduction for small business owners to incentivize people to own small businesses?
Well, I think that you saw that the administration and the president announced a good program yesterday called Startup America that is designed to encourage entrepreneurship in this country. And as a result of that, they are looking at finding some middle ground between the Congress and the administration on small business taxes. Certainly the death tax issue has been one that has been on the table for a number of years. I think that the changes in the laws with the extension of the so-called Bush tax credits, or tax cuts rather, are a step in the right direction. The economy has changed dramatically, and when you look at small business owners, when you look at family farmers, and when you look at families that have just accumulated over time, the ability to pass that along creates not only a standard of living for the people who are the next generation that are the recipients, but it also creates the funding possibilities for angel investors in small business, in entrepreneurship. It creates the opportunity to invest in the stock market to support major corporations and other entities that are involved in the stock market. So it does stimulate the economy to have a higher threshold before you start paying taxes on inheritance.
We're talking to Bill Buer, everybody, Executive Vice President of the Council on Competitiveness. Bill, I'm going to change gears. We're going to move away from taxes right now. The administration talks about reducing our dependency on foreign oil by the year 2035. Is this possible without making massive investments in alternative energy?
Well, I think that any energy scheme for this country that is going to be successful and drive down our dependence on foreign oil and petroleum based activity is going to have to be across the board. It's going to include coal, clean coal. It's going to include wind, solar, and key to this is going to be nuclear. You know, when you look at where we are in the nuclear environment, you see that is where other countries are going, and to the degree that we can add that to the mix, it doesn't have to be all of it. Natural gas is another piece of this puzzle that we have an abundance of, but as people say, we are the Saudi Arabia of coal, and as a result of that, what we've got to do is use our competitive technology and innovation capabilities to find ways to produce clean coal, both in the mining of coal as well as in the use of coal as one of those issues. So we have very smart people in our education system in this country, particularly at the higher education level, and to create incentives that will incentivize Stanford or MIT or Rice University down in Texas to come up with the answers to these questions. When you talk about alternative coal, for example, I'm sorry, alternative wind and solar, the big problems you hear are in the ability to capture it and the ability to transmit it. And we've got smart people in this country who have that innovative gene that will drive that if we'll just create an environment to allow that to happen. And with that will be additional jobs, additional standard of living improvements that we will see over time.
Well, Bill, I'm glad you brought up nuclear power, because countries such as France get as much as 20% of their electricity from nuclear power. In fact, in France, you can't drive just a few kilometers without seeing a nuclear power plant everywhere else. But we had a big accident at Three Mile Island, and then followed shortly by Chernobyl in Russia, that has sort of soured the American people on nuclear energy. What's it going to take to reverse people's thinking about nuclear as an option for providing additional energy in this country?
Well, I think that just like so many other things that have changed over time, if you go back and you say, when did Three Mile Island, which, by the way, no one lost their life at Three Mile Island.
That's right.
When Chernobyl occurred, it was a different time, different technology, different capabilities. It's like some of the programs that the National Highway Transportation Safety folks run to show you the difference in the damage of a 1956 sedan and a 2010 sedan in crash tests. The technologies are better. It's a proven technology around the world. Not only does France, for example, use it to produce 20% of its power, but it also uses it as a desalinization, as a spin-off benefit when it's not producing power, to create more clean water for their citizens as well. So these are the kind of benefits that are available today that may not have been available 15, 20, 30 years ago, to make nuclear a more viable part of the mix. Again, 20% is a goal that many experts in this country say is the appropriate goal for us. just like it is for the French and others who do use nuclear.
All right. We're talking to Bill Buer, everybody, EVP, Executive Vice President of the Council on Competitiveness. And, Bill, in your last answer, you talked about some of the genetics of our people who have great educations who want to go on and solve some of these problems. Let's talk for just a moment more about education. The President's Race to the Top campaign for education is kind of sputtering right now. Test results, the quality of education have really moved little since the program began. What steps does the United States have to make to improve the competitiveness of our education vis-a-vis the rest of the world?
Well, for fear of sounding like the old adage of I'm from Washington and I'm here to help you, in fairness to the President's Race to the Top campaign, most of the funding, if not all of the funding for that, has not really gone out. So the communities that won those Race to the Top grants have not had the opportunity to implement them at this time. So I think that perhaps it's not quite time to judge that. I think that both this president and former President Bush have both, in their own way, recognized the critical nature of our education system in this country and what we need to do to try to be competitive on a global basis. And the answer to that is that we really do have to look at our K through 12 as well as our higher education. We have the best colleges and universities in the world, and people are beating the doors down from all over the world to come and learn and benefit from those educational institutions. But as Bob Ballard, the gentleman who found the Titanic, if you will, said once at a speech, we know we're succeeding in education in these areas on a global basis when we're concerned not about where our children get into college, but where they go to junior high, because that's where the breakdown in these areas that are so critical to the future, such as science and math and technology, is coming. Raytheon did a study a number of years ago that said in fourth grade, math was the most popular subject to the bulk of the kids. By the time they got to ninth grade, they'd rather mow the grass, rake the leaves, or go to the dentist rather than do their math homework.
Wow.
Now, what's happening there? Part of the problem is that the number of teachers that we have out there who are certified to teach math and science are only a small number of those who actually teach it across the country. We've got to incentivize in some way these students who go to college to get a teaching degree and an education degree and a teaching certificate. We've got to find ways to incentivize them to become specialists in math and science. There's a great story that I love to tell when I'm talking to groups. It concerns Norm Augustine, the previous chairman at Lockheed Martin. Norm is a PhD engineer, led one of the most advanced companies in the country in scientific and technical activities. When he retired, he went to the Montgomery County Public Schools here in the Washington, D.C. area and asked if he could teach high school science. He was told he was unqualified. So, having been told that, he went to Princeton and taught nuclear physics.
Well, there.
So that in and of itself is an example of where we're missing the opportunity to bring people from the science community, from the math community, who have a passion as well as a knowledge, and convey that passion to the children of the next generation to be involved in this, so that our competitive genes are stimulated by not just who's going to win the Super Bowl on Sunday, but what country has the fastest supercomputer and those sorts of things. So,
and we're going to have to leave it there, Bill. Obviously, this is a very passionate subject for you. We've been talking to Bill Buer, who's the Executive Vice President of the Council on Competitiveness. Bill, if people want to learn more about you, want to learn more about the Council, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, we would certainly encourage them to come to our website, which is www.compete, that's compete.org. We are a very unique organization because our membership, as you mentioned, is exclusively CEOs, university presidents, and labor leaders. Those three legs of the economic vision stool are so important in the policy discussions that go on here in Washington and in the state capitals all over the country. And we encourage people to come to our website, pick up the phone, call us, tell us what they think, send us an email, however they would like to communicate, because we believe that, this country does have the basic DNA of competitiveness. And if we're going to compete in the global marketplace in the, 21st century, we have to address all of these issues in a practical and prudent way in the policy community that will lead this whole discussion as we go forward.
And that's well said. We've been talking to Bill Buer, everybody, the Executive Vice President of the Council on Competitiveness. Bill, we'll talk to you down the road.
Great. We look forward to it. Thanks for inviting us to be on today.
My pleasure.